You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to the draft previews of the Absent Minded era. And for this time, I have an old friend who worked together at Profiles and other research projects from time to time. It's Josh Tesler of Smuck Scouting. Thank you for joining us, Josh. It's a pleasure to finally have you on the air and get a conversation that is not just typing words to each other.
Yeah, man. And thank you so much for having me on.
I like the fact that you have gone through and you made a list, your list a little bit different from the others, depending on your scouting team and all that stuff. You can obviously find the whole list at smartscouting.com. For some weird reason, everyone seems to have Connor Bedard at number one, so let's skip that. You got Adam Fantilli on two. And then Matvei Mitchkov at number three. What is your thought process behind that, first and foremost?
Personally, for me, that was a tougher one at the draft rankings call because, you know, for me, you know, I've been leaning towards Leo Carlson all year long. And it's just when I look at Leo Carlson, the upside, what I think Leo Carlson can be is a top six cornerstone kind of guy, like someone that you're going to build around. And I there were times throughout the year that I questioned Matvei Mitchkov's upside because at least before the loan, you know, there were some red flags for me that popped up where I questioned, his scanning ability. He just wasn't identifying true passing lanes and really needed to look for the pass rather than just gamble. I just didn't see a real game breaker, game changer in Matvei Mitchkov early on this year. After the loan, he really found himself again, in Sochi at the DKHL level. And it was great to see him rebound and really take control, especially in transition. When you compare the two players, Leo Carlson's consistency was far greater throughout this year in terms of the production, especially at FIB5. Then the loan just really solved everything for Matvei. For me, I still have Leo Carlson higher on my own list, but at the end of the day, it came down to what my entire team thought. And that's part of the challenge of doing draft rankings is, sometimes you lose out on individual battles on players because you have to go with the consensus. For me, on my own list, I have Leo higher, but the upside that you're going to get out of Matvei Mitchkov, I'm constantly seeing his contract being brought up. Yes, he's got 3 years left on his contract, but at the same point, the upside, the potential that you're going to get out of Matvei Mitchkov is worth waiting. So while I wouldn't take him at three personally, I would definitely take him at four. So there's my two cents on the Leo Carlson, Matvei Mitchkov debate.
Yeah, and I know my listeners have been hearing this a lot, but I've been saying a little bit like Mitchkov has the potential to be the guy that falls through the draft, maybe the furthest out of the expected players. But he's also the player that I think has the best chance of becoming a standout superstar. Don't get me wrong. I think that Connor Bedard is going to be one of those cornerstones that you can really build around, and he's going to be super good. But I don't see those alls and ahs and everything as soon as he enters the zone, as I can see a little bit with Matvei Mitchkov, where people will get on their feet because now Mitchkov has the puck. And this superstar quality in that regard, I don't really see with Bedard. But as you say, if you have the option to wait for 3 years, Matvei Mitchkov should be your pick very, very early in this draft. Another thing that you are differentiating about is really that, and this might be very, very interesting for Montreal fans and those other fans we're catering for right now, is obviously that you have Zach Benson at number five. Fantastic season in Winnipeg and all that. But, you know, it is a standout because most rankings has Will Smith at that point. If you don't have Will Smith even higher.
Yeah. And for us, it simply comes down to projection, right? I mean, we think that the tools that Zach Benson has, the tenaciousness that he has, the drive to constantly be engaged in play, whether whether with the puck or without the puck. He's just a dynamic two-way forward. What we see out of Will Smith is Will Smith can score. He's great in transition, but I don't see him as a center at the next level. And that really comes down to his defensive game. I just don't think it's polished enough to where I would fully trust him as a center at the next level. And so I would move him over to wing. And also because I just think he's going to be even more his ability to thread, you know, excellent give and go plays. Him on the wing, like, he's going to be able to pull that off more and more. And he's just not conservative enough for me to really trust as a true center. And so that's why I would shift him over. But, you know, Will Smith is going to score, and he's going to score. Like, but I just look at Benson and I think that the projection for me is higher. Like, Benson's kind of got like the, like, I wouldn't call him Johnny Gaudreau, but like, there are things that he does that like reminds me of Johnny Gaudreau. Like, he's zippy. He's just always engaged, especially in transition. At the end of the day, like, I'm going to bank on the player that's just got more tools in the bucket. I see more tools in the bucket, and I think the upside and the potential is higher and higher.
I have to ask, you know, Zach Benson, 5'10", there's always this conversation about Montreal being a team of Smurfs. He would be another Smurf at that time, right?
Yes, yes.
And how would that project into the NHL?
I'm not really worried about Zach Benson in terms of his frame at, like, the next level. Because, like, it ultimately comes back down to his skating. Like, he's just so zippy, and his ability to generate the speed that he needs, north, south, east, west, it doesn't really matter. Benson has the speed, and he has the speed to figure out, and he has the speed to get out of jams. I'm just not worried about NHL competition, that he would face at the next level. You know, there are guys later on our rankings where I'm a bit more concerned, but then I still see the upside factor and think, if only these players can, you know, build up a little bit more upper body, you know, so that way they can push guys off and things like that.
You mentioned Zach Benson, fantastic skating. And that is actually the weakness that Will Smith has. It's his skating in many ways. And how important is skating to get into the next level, be it AHL or be it NHL?
I mean, it's always going to come down to where the player is, right? Because each player is going to be different. But with that said, like, I, you know, to get to the next level, you know, you really need to have a really good north-south stride. I see a lot of players where they're getting there and they're close, but they just have to lengthen their extensions a bit more. And the thing to consider too is, like, at that age, they're really discovering exactly what they can actually do with their, you know, frame. Sometimes, you know, skating just takes a little bit longer in terms of, in terms of really just, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to extend my extensions further and keep balance. It just comes down to, what can I do with my body? It takes some players a little bit longer to really develop that power stride. But then, you know, I'll look at guys like last year with Liam Ogren. Like, Liam Ogren skating, I loved it. Like all year long, like, his north-south stride, his ability to stay aligned on the day forecheck. I enjoyed every single viewing. Like, there was no bad Liam Ogren viewing for me. And from the get-go in his draft year, you saw that. Like the play at Hlinka, like, Liam Ogren was fantastic. And his skating makes him who he is. He can be that, he can be that great power forward because he has that north-south and east-west combination that he can rely on, to keep himself aligned, towards oppositional puck movement.
Do you think Montreal would pick Zach Benson, Will Smith, or someone else?
That's really tough because, I could see Montreal going in, several different directions. It's like, ultimately, when I look back at last year, they went Uri over Shane Wright. For me, I had Wright higher. I just look at the Montreal draft history from, the last few years, and, for me, it's kind of hard to guess where they go. I could see them going Will Smith, though, because – because he offers that goal scoring upside, that they're going to need, when they are going to be, very much competitive, over the next 5-6 years and have a true, dynamic goal scorer that they can rely on in a line two spot. And I can certainly see that role being a good one for Will Smith. I would probably lean Will Smith. I could see them going Mappe Michkov if he drops. I could also potentially maybe even see David Reinbacher. I know he's been rumored and linked to Montreal. He's a bit further down on our list. And again, it just comes back to projection. And I think where some NHL scouts have him projected doesn't really align with where we have him. And so that's why he's, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think he's number 20 on our list. I just see a top four defenseman where his skating and his footwork, he's still really working on it, still really, really working on positional angling. He is a solid rush defenseman and he's been solid all year long in the NLA. I think that the upside that you're going to get out of player like Zach Benson and Will Smith is higher than what you would get out of David Reinbacher. And so for me, I would go Benson or Will Smith before David Reinbacher.
I can agree with you in regards to Reinbacher. It is a name to keep an eye on, and not everyone is very high on him. Obviously, your group isn't. I know that Thomas Rost of Central Scouting isn't very high on him either. Might have changed after the World Championships.
We're going to take a quick break and listen to some of our sponsors.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
And we're back.
Let's continue down the defensive road with someone ranked very, very high that I might have been part of with one of my interviews to cause a little bit of damage to your list in a way. You got Axel Sundin Pelikka at number 8. And why is that? Is it that complete upside? Because he has a ton of upside, but also he's a little bit more uncertain than Reinbacher.
Yeah, he's a little bit more uncertain with Reinbacher, but upside for us, again, it just comes down to projection. And I'd rather bet on upside than safety every single time. That's just my style. I see safer players and I err caution because I think that eventually down the line, I can acquire those safer players via free agency, via trade, but I want to use my draft capital on as many players with upside as possible because they are rarer. So throughout the draft, I'm just going to continue to vouch for players, with higher upside over, you know, over what their ceiling might be.
Would you take a defender at number five?
I'd take a defenseman at number five. Probably not. I think the earliest I would probably take one, probably like seven or eight. But I think five is a little bit too high. And it just, you know, and it just comes down to, you know, and it just comes down to, you know, how strong the forward group is.
And this is a very strong forward group, let's be honest. And there's a pretty good defensive group coming up next year. A little bit more depth in defense and a little bit more variance of defenders as well. Whereas now either or, there you can get a little bit more mixed package. Going forward, tell us about some of the players that, well, outside the top 10, that you think is standing out for different reasons. Those are maybe your favorite players.
Okay, so players outside of the top 10. Let me go to the smart scouting board, and so that way I can, give you the rank for each one. Scrolling down to the complete list instead of looking through every single paragraph. Even though I love the team's work, I just simply want to go to the list. So guys outside of the top 10. Well, I want to highlight Gavin Brindley first, even though he's at nine on the smart scouting board, just like, you know, like the, you know, like the tenacious factor, the mobility, like he's constantly just zooming, zoom, 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 like the Mazda ads, like. That is Gavin Brindley. His motor is just always running. It really makes him who he is, especially on like the forecheck. He's engaged, and I just love watching Gavin Brindley. But after 10, Jaden Perron, I know he's a bit lower on other boards. You know, with Jaden Perron, it comes back to the distribution, you know, his ability to deliver great passes in, you know, in all three zones, and I just love his passing ability. He's a great playmaking prospect. And we've got him at 15 on the smart scouting board. If I go further down the list, I very much enjoy Otto Stenberg. We've got him at 22.
There's a little bit of discussion about Stenberg. Would you play him as wing or would you play him as center?
I play him as wing because the skating, so again, it comes back to he doesn't really have a true power stride. He's really reliant on his crossovers, and that's what he's using, you know, for acceleration. And so while he can be conservative at times, I'd rather play him on like a wing. I just feel like that comes back down to skating ability. But I think if he can ultimately improve his skating, sure. I would consider him at center, but I think if doesn't really develop much and he's still, you know, and he's still reliant on his crossovers at the next level for speed, then yeah, I would probably leave him on like the wing. With all that said, I just got to say, because I actually published a report on him last night, and with Stenberg, he really held his own at the SHL level, even though his power stride isn't there. And so at the SHL level for Stenberg, my read on him in his SHL sample this year was that he held his own. He was constantly engaged in play, but the problem solving, especially in the offensive zone under pressure, the SHL level, you know, he was holding on to pucks for slightly too long, and he really needed to, you know, gauge exactly in what situations he can actually use his stick handling to, you know, to get out of pressure or when to make the pass. And it ultimately came down to, I just have to gauge exactly how much space I need in order to make the play.
You got another person that you want to highlight a little bit?
William Whitelaw, another tenacious forward. He played for the Youngstown Phantoms this year. He's a Wisconsin commit. Like with Whitelaw, he's just always on pucks. He's a little bit like Like, he's a little bit smaller in size, but he's hard on pucks. He's got a great shot. The one thing with Whitelaw that I wanted to see more and more this year is really shot selection at times, deciding to pass over shooting. The thing with William Whitelaw was that in every single viewing was that he wasn't always making the pass to the dangerous areas. And so with that said, he was testing his shot from range more and more. And the odd thing is that Whitelaw in the defensive zone and neutral zone, his distribution is great. It was the offensive zone where I was just like, I want to see more passes to the dangerous areas. And if he and if he's doing that, his production would be substantially higher. And so that's the area that I really want to see William Whitelaw focus in on over the next few years at the University of Wisconsin.
You mentioned University of Wisconsin, the NCAA. We got the deal with the European clubs. So you get an opportunity to have these kids for 4 years evaluation rather than the 2 years if you come from the Canadian youth system. Does that factor in when you rank players?
No, not really. I mean, there are some leagues where I'm a little bit worried about the development path. And ultimately, if I was, a advisor or an agent, for certain players, I would alter their path a little bit. But but it's actually funny that you bring it up because Tom Wielander is actually he's playing for BU next year. Do like the development path for him, at BU, because throughout my viewings this year, while I really, really like Tom Wielander's defensive ability, what I wanted to see a bit more of was more, was just a bit more physicality and on smaller ice in NCAA play. He's got the speed to get there. It's just a matter of implementing that physicality. And, when you're playing on larger ice, you're just a little bit uncertain of, well, can I be that physical, but still not open up gaps. With that said, I think that the path for Tom Wielander makes a ton of sense, and I love that path. And so I can't wait for what he's going to be at BU next year.
It's interesting though, because he has played pro in SHL. So be able to go to the NCAA is a little bit weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I haven't read into that situation all that much. But yeah, you don't often see pro players moving to collegiate teams. And it's an interesting one. I don't know what loophole there is.
Might be playing time or something like that, or they don't know that SHL is a pro league. Could be that as well. We never know with North Americans. I'm going to ask you and finish the podcast with this. Montreal at the moment has the 31st pick from Florida, obviously. And the 37th pick, which is their own. What do you think, or which players should Montreal target at those positions?
It's funny because I actually did two mocks prior to hopping on the podcast. So I did a mock through draft prospects, and I did another one through FC Hockey. At 31 on the draft prospects list, I ended up with Gavin Brindley. And then 37, I ended up with Jaden Perron. On the FC Hockey one, I ended up with I ended up with Nate Danielson at 31 and Sachin at 37. At the end of the day, it's really going to come down to the Montreal consensus list and what player they value higher. But, but at the end of the day, like, I could see them, betting on guys like Gav Brindley and Jaden Perron. They scouts do not hesitate to draft smaller forwards and smaller defensemen as well. Lane Hudson, shout out. For me, it's like 3 to 45 is just like, it's really hard to predict, because like, it's just like, I could see like the draft going like going 20 different ways. Like, it's so hard to project, but I really do think that the Habs are going to bet on upside as much as possible. And, you know, and if they can, you know, and if they can get a guy like Gavin Brindley, Jaden Perron or Grayson Sachin, or even Nate Danielson. I don't think Nate Danielson's going to fall to 31, but I think Nate Danielson's probably gone within like the first, I think he's a top 10 pick. I would be shocked if he's on the board past 15. I would be shocked. I just think I see Nate Danielson and I see a safe player. I think the team that takes him in a top 10 spot takes him in a top 10 spot, because the projection for them is slightly higher than where the smart scouting team has him. But I do see a relatively safe player. You know, he's going to get, you know, he's going to play NHL minutes, you know, but, you know, but for me, you know, there are times where I see him as a, you know, like, I'm sorry, like, you know, like there are times where I'm watching him and I'm thinking like, okay, you look like you're more of like a third line center, but then there are some times where I think that he could be a 2C. So, you know, it just comes down to, where do you feel comfortable betting on players?
You've been listening to Josh Tesler. You can find him at Twitter, at Josh Tesler, _ at the end. Follow him, ask him questions. As you heard, knowledgeable, and he will get back to you pretty soon if you have a fair question to him. You can also find the Smash Scouting List. Very good information to follow up and use and combine with other scouting lists, because we all see different things and we all promote different things. Obviously, I'm very angry with you from where you have Felix Nilsson. We're not going to get into that. It has been a pleasure to have you on, Josh. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Patrick, for having me on. I can't wait to see what you guys do at the draft, and I can't wait for Nashville.